The next case from our working group was a woman in her early 80s who was BRCA germline wild type and treated with debulking surgery and carboplatin paclitaxel for peritoneal serous adenocarcinoma. The patient had a relapse 3 years later and received carboplatin paclitaxel, but recurred again 6 months later. She was also treated with niraparib at a dose of 300 milligrams a day, but had to be dose reduced to 100 milligrams daily due to thrombocytopenia. The patient had an excellent response and is now PET negative, and I asked Professor Letterman how he would manage the situation.
Well, this is the question really of platinum resistance or not, and we've recently just gone through this in the European Society of Medical Oncology and European Society of Gyne-Oncology and developed some guidelines which are just in press with Annals of Oncology, looking at this question of platinum resistance, and really I think take a much more liberal view that patients are not platinum resistant unless they are resistant to platinum. Platinum is still one of the best, if not the best, chemotherapy drug that we have. So in this sort of situation, I would use chemotherapy in the first instance, and if the patient then responds to platinum-based chemotherapy, would use a PARP inhibitor as maintenance. So that would be my line of approach until I was certain that this patient had platinum resistance.
What about this issue, Katie, of efficacy of niraparib at the lower dose? This patient seemed to respond very well. What do we know about correlation of niraparib dose, Katie, and dose in general of PARP inhibitors and efficacy?
So niraparib is an interesting drug, and I think the PRIMA data will be incredibly important once we have the efficacy to correlate with starting dose. But niraparib is an interesting drug as compared to at least the two others that we most commonly are referring to, olaparib and rucaparib, because it's once daily. The half-life is 34 hours, so it's very long-lived. Its volume of distribution is very large as compared to the other two, and its dose exposure is, I don't want to say inconsistent, but it's very much overlapping. And so you have patients on 100 milligrams who are still in a dose exposure level that's equivalent to patients who are on 300 milligrams. So there seems to be some individualization of what patients need, and the platelets may be telling us sort of how much they need, although I may be stretching a little bit. So with niraparib in particular, if you dose reduce according to hematologic toxicity, you kind of get the patients to the right dose for them. And the efficacy, at least on post-hoc analysis, we have to be careful, doesn't seem to change. Like, they seem to have the same benefit. I don't think we can say right now that, oh, I can start at 100 and the efficacy is going to be the same. I think we have to be very careful with that message. The PRIMA prospective data, the post-amendment data, I think will give us some reassurance there. But when you dose modify appropriately, it does not appear to impact efficacy. And I think the same is true for olaparib and rucaparib. We just haven't seen the same degree of dose modification required, except in rucaparib with the liver enzymes, mm-hmm. but we still saw good efficacy there.